This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Three new studies published this past Sunday in the journal Science and in Nature Medicine reveal that young blood injected into older mice reverses aging effects. Researchers describe dramatic changes in the older mice's muscles and brains following a conjoining of blood circulations. And in this Forum segment, we want to focus our attention on this recently published research and what it may mean for the aging of our own species. And one of the professors involved in this research is here with us in studio. Salvo Ojeda is assistant professor of anatomy at UCSF and an author of the UCSF Stanford study. And welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Well, let's talk about this Frankenstein thing first, as it's been described. Parabiosis. You actually take, let me see if I got this right, you take the flaps of the skin from genetically identical mice and limited to one strain of mice, and sew them together. And as a result, what do you get? Well, in about 4 weeks, you get progress.
Yeah. So we're piggybacking off of nature, off of normal wound healing. You know, when you cut your finger, I cut my finger, you know, about a decade ago, you go to the hospital, you get stitches. And over time, you know, your capillaries will bind together, your skin will kind of join together. That's the same process we're using. A lot of people are asking, oh, do you do microvessel, you know, surgeries? We're literally just using what nature already does.
But it actually boosts stem cell activity. It actually makes it easier to produce neurons. It actually helps muscle tissue. I mean, these things have been pretty much documented.
Absolutely. There's something in young blood, and that's what we're really studying. We can study the effect of young blood on the old organism, the effect of the old blood on the young organism. And that's why this model is so important, in that it gives us exchange of these two aging blood populations.
Why didn't it work for Kim Jong-il? Didn't he have young virgin blood injected in him a lot of his adult life? No, I don't mean to make light of this, but, you know, right away you think of these are mice. What about humans? I know there's a clinical trial that's set to go with humans, but that's quite a quantum jump to get in the human species.
Yeah, I think the thing to keep in mind is, you know, there were three studies that used this model of parabiosis. And then in our own study, which was initiated in Dr. Tony West-Corey's lab at Stanford, and then we continued in my lab at UCSF, we also did plasma treatments, which is an injection, which is a lot more applicable than, you know, having to sew together two organisms together. So I think, you know, we're making progress even in the experimental model. This is, you know, just injecting young blood 8 times over 24 days elicited these responses in the old mice at a cognitive level.
We're talking again with Salvo Ojeda, who's assistant professor of anatomy and an author on the UCSF Stanford study. Let's talk about the mice, though, for the nonce. There's injections essentially, as I said, about 4 weeks you saw some results, but you also had them work through mazes and do other kinds of things. Talk about that.
Yeah. So I'll try and put it a little bit into human context. So we have different types of learning and memory. And one of the ones that goes becomes impaired with aging is known as spatial learning and memory. So what do I mean by that? I commute from Menlo Park to UCSF every day, and I park in this structure. And up on the upper floors of the structure, there's a great view of the Golden Gate Bridge. So I try and park around there. I bring my car, usually leave it there. And there's usually an electric car charger up in the top floors. And usually I try to get to the elevator because, you know, I don't like walking that much. So I leave it there. I come back a few hours later.
It's good exercise.
Well, I have to climb up the hill on Parnassus too, so I get some. So you come back a few hours later, and then my brain is going to take those cues, the Golden Gate Bridge, electric car charger, elevator, and it's going to direct me back to where I left my car, spatial learning and memory. Now, when you get older, that becomes harder, and your brain is going to have a harder time remembering the location of your car with respect to those cues. And all of a sudden, you're going to start seeing people that are a bit older starting to use their car alarm to, you know, wandering around the parking lot trying to find their car. So there's these impairments that occur. We can actually study that same idea, that same form of learning and memory in mice by using things such as water mazes. And what we do is we have a cloudy pool of water. We have a hidden platform, and we put cues around the pool. Just like, you know, the Golden Gate and the electric car charger for me, we have cues around the pool. And with a young animal, you put them in over repeated times, they get really good. They start jetting straight to that hidden platform because they hate water. Then you put an older guy in there, and he doesn't have as easy of a time finding this platform. He never gets as good as a young animal. It takes him longer. He makes more errors. Now, what we saw is after we gave the injections of young blood plasma, and at Stanford we did intravenous injections, at UCSF we did intraorbital injections, so it doesn't matter how you get the blood plasma into the bloodstream as long as you get it in. And what we saw is that these old animals, which normally would have these impairments, all of a sudden weren't as bad. They looked a lot more like the younger ones. Not quite as good as the 3-month-old mice, but much, much better.
And by contrast, when you put older blood into younger mice, you got more impairment.
Exactly.
Slowing down and aging.
Yeah, so we published a paper back in 2011 in Nature, back when I was a graduate student in the Weiss-Corey lab. And we showed that there's also things in old blood that are bad. So I really think of it as two potential strategies for rejuvenation, and they're not mutually exclusive. One of them being you introduce pro-youthful factors for rejuvenation, and one of them being maybe you abrogate or take down or reduce the expression of some of these pro-aging factors. And, you know, in terms of humans, maybe we need a combination of both. Maybe we need to get rid of some of the bad stuff and put in some of the good stuff.
Do you need a constant supply to maintain these effects?
These are all wonderful questions. However, you know, the study looked at the effects about 1 week after the injections. We've never looked beyond that. You know, these are ongoing studies. So,
you don't know about long-term consequences either.
Exactly. There's still a lot to be studied.
And as we said, this is limited to one strain of mice. Correct?
Inbred strain of mice.
One inbred strain, right. So we're going to have clinical trials at Stanford with Alzheimer's and dementia in this?
Yeah, so the senior author is a co-founder of a company, Alkahest, so I know is very, very interested in applying this towards therapeutics in humans. And I know they want to go, you know, as fast as they can. However, you know, what I've been telling the public is definitely please be patient with the scientists. You know, that bridge between these, you know, so the research and the application towards patients should really be done in a controlled manner. So I really just, you know, I want the public to be excited about what science can do and at the same time be patient with us to let us get to the next step in the appropriate manner.
Well, one always has problems with having the public be patient, particularly when it comes to maybe slowing down aging. There's a built-in impatience with that can't be dismissed. I'm just wondering, though, about when people get blood transfused, there's no indication of how young the donors are or how old the donors are. Wouldn't that make a difference?
Yeah, so all identifiable information is removed, and you know that's for the sake of just anonymity of the people donating the blood. The other thing I always think about in terms of transfusions is with respect to seeing sort of effects, that's also confounded by the fact that someone receiving a transfusion is usually doing so for a particular reason. So I think, you know, we may be able to get anecdotal, maybe evidence or suggestions, but I think in order to really figure out whether this is translatable, it has to be in a controlled environment. We have to know the age that it's coming from and into who it's going under normal age conditions, not some sort of, you know, compounding effect.
Talking about Salvietta, and he's one of the authors of the UCSF Stanford study and an assistant professor of anatomy, all about mice and aging effects on mice and how that may translate to our own species. Well, be patient is his watchword here. And you can join us if you have questions or comments. In fact, we welcome your involvement in the program. Please feel free to join us now. Toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. And we do welcome your calls and invite you to join us at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or post any questions or comments you have onto our website. And of course, you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. David writes, everyone thinking what I'm thinking, regular mandatory blood donation by the youth. Adults will get replacement blood from the youth stock when they donate blood for regular medical needs. GDF-11, we'll have to talk about that, is upstream from ALK-4 and ALK-5. Known to influence myocyte and myotube, we're getting in the weeds here, formation from myoblasts and influence muscle hypertrophy around the heart. There are drugs that do this. Well, he's talking, at least initially, about maybe getting all that young blood out there and sort of cornering it in some way. But let's talk just for a moment, if we can get a gloss from you, about this growth differential molecule and also the hormone. This is a Krebs protein that you've discovered in all this.
Yeah, so in terms of the other two studies, you know, as a scientist, it's always so exciting when there's a body of work that
it's
comes
like a
out
convergence
together.
Here, yeah.
Exactly. You know, and I think it's rare when completely independent groups, you know, there was the Harvard groups and then our own research, all the major findings were reproducible both at Stanford and at UCSF by different students and postdocs.
And forgive me, I had two separate studies at Harvard. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. So by different labs. So I think when something like this happens, at least from the scientist perspective, it's great. It's amazing. It means that there's confirmation, corroboration, and complementary findings, and it really makes it a lot stronger. You know, you believe the science because multiple people are seeing it in multiple places. I think that's great. In terms of the Harvard studies, yeah, they went on and even identified GDF-11, and they've previously shown that it can even have effects on cardiac hypertrophy and aging, you know, one of the aging effects on the heart. And then they also showed, again, like we showed before, that old blood can be bad in terms of brain stem cells. I think what we need to do now is figure out – you know, is there one factor that does, let's say, regeneration? Is there another factor that says enhances cognition? Is it a combination of factors? I think especially when you think of something like cognition, it's so multifaceted. Stem cells are involved. Neurons are involved.
Well, excuse me. Most of this research has been focused on the hippocampus.
So our research was all hippocampus.
Recall, spatial patterns.
Yeah, hippocampus. Yeah, but within that region, you know, we have stem cells, we have the neurons, the connections, electrophysiology, you know, the electrical. So in order to get an effect on learning and memory, a lot of things have to be going right. A lot of things have to be changed. So the idea is it one factor? Is it multiple factors? I think it's probably going to be a combination in order to get an effect as complicated as cognition. But I think finding this factor is already amazing because it tells us we are able to identify beneficial factors that can have real effects, at least in our mouse models.
A lot of emphasis in that context about this protein that's found in the
absolutely,
blood of young mice.
Yeah, and it was shown to have effects on muscle and now on brain stem cells. I think it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm really interested to see what else comes out.
So what about when your Stanford partner, he says it's as if old brains were recharged by young blood, but he also says the control experiment was far from sophisticated. I'm quoting him directly there.
I mean, absolutely. I think the idea of introducing young blood into an old organism, you know, it doesn't sound quite cutting edge.
It's an old idea, isn't it?
It's a very old idea. I mean, even if we go back to the parabiosis model, you know, the first time I think that it was scientifically published was 1860s. I think it was 1864, 1865. So even that model has been around for a really, really long time. I think
take this old blood out with leeches too. Right?
So yeah, the whole idea of there being something special in blood. I mean, look at folklore too. Look at all the different cultures.
Look at the vampires.
I get that a lot.
Starfinder, one of our listeners, writes, can you do a transfusion of plasma from one species of animal into another species without triggering immune reactions?
Yeah, don't do that.
That's what I figured. Okay. Another email from Richard says, why would new blood affect the apparent age of the mice? What is the theoretical basis for the change? Well, we've been talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to have an effect on cells and on molecules, right? Within the brain, like you said, we even find genetic changes. It reverses genetic changes.
So. And, of course, Bob writes, so the vampires had it right all along. Frank writes, this finding makes logical sense since it is in the blood that a lot of the key enzymes are found that are needed for maintaining good health, and the concentration of these enzymes decreases with age. And let's go to your calls and find out not only your reactions, any questions or comments you have. We'll begin with Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I was wondering if your findings have any applicability to finding a cure for Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah, I think one important thing to keep in mind is that our studies so far have been focused on normal aging. We haven't even seen we haven't tested the beneficial effects of young blood on any sort of disease model. And I think that's definitely really important new avenues of research that are going to be ongoing right now.
And again, let's not it was the same thing with stem cells. There was so much expectation and inflated notions of what stem cells would do as opposed to what a long-term research might bring. Let me go to another caller here, and we welcome Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi. So I don't know if you've heard, there's a new thing going on among the hair loss medication industry, which is called a vampire therapy, and that's very similar to what you were just saying, is injecting blood into the scalp, and that seems to be reversing the effects of hair loss. I don't know if you've looked at any of that.
Yeah, I actually haven't looked into any of those studies or therapies. Like I said before, I think in terms of chronic long-term treatment, you know, not acute, not one exposure, but, you know, if it takes a lot of exposures over many, many years, I think we have a lot of studies still to do to make sure there aren't any adverse effects, at least for what we're talking about in terms of aging.
There are molecular, as we've said, also biochemical and anatomical advances and evidence of cognitive improvement in all this, but I have to emphasize again, this is mice we're talking about here. We haven't even gone to the sapiens by any stretch of the matter, but one of the things I found fascinating in the research and reading about it was you could actually inject the younger blood into the older mice and they would freeze faster and longer with fear.
Yeah, so that's a different type of learning and memory that we can test, and that's contextual learning and memory. And the best example I think I have for that in terms of humans is myself when I was in elementary school. There was this one class I absolutely hated. And as soon as I went into the classroom, the teacher didn't have to be there. It could be without anyone there. But I would walk into the classroom and I'd get this tickle in my stomach, you know, like, oh, I remember this place. That's sort of what we're testing in these mice. So when you put them into, you know, this aversive context on the training day, you come back the next day, you put them back in, and you go, how well do you remember you didn't like this place? You know, you didn't have a good experience here. And then the young mice will get it quite quickly and freeze. That's their innate response. You know, they don't like that place. They're going to freeze. They don't want to move.
And obviously, you got through elementary school just fine.
Oh, look at me. Yeah.
I'm going to get another caller on here, and that's Stephen from Mountain View. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. I've had about 50 transfusions over the past 3 years, and I can only assume, since I'm 67, that a goodly amount of those donors were younger than I, and they have been expecting me to have some deterioration vis-a-vis encephalopathy, which that has never happened, thank goodness. But I was wondering if there might be you know, some kind of correlation between the fact that I'm still pretty alert and I've had all those transfusions. So,
well, first off, I'm really glad that you're doing well. I think for what we're doing, we still don't have enough information about the type of blood that or the age of the blood to really make any sort of conclusions from these sort of evidence. I hear that a lot. The other thing I should point out for all the listeners is, you know, I'm a PhD, so I'm not actually a physician in terms of sort of the medical aspects of this.
And I thank you for the call. And stay healthy, Stephen. Glad
thank
it's,
you.
Whatever it is working for you. This is really improved learning, though, that we're talking about in memory, increased brain cell connections, I mean, for the most part. So, I mean, even though medicine is not your realm here, we're talking largely, again, about the brain.
Absolutely. And the same principles that apply in the mouse brain apply in the human brain, with the difference being complexity. You know, our brains are much more complex.
Yeah, I think I've said this on the air. I had a sinus headache. I went into the emergency room, had an MRI, and my doctor called and said, don't be alarmed when you get your report and it says your brain is atrophying. Because she said, it's atrophying because of aging, and there's no getting around the fact that brains do atrophy. And this suggests at least a possibility. I mean, there's probably a lot of Silicon Valley venture capitalists who are looking at this and saying, whoa, you know, if we can reverse that or at least even stave it off.
I think really the game-changing idea, you know, and this has been building up over a decade. The first, you know, sort of rejuvenation studies with respect to stem cell, you know, came out of Tom Randall's lab with Irina Combo now at Berkeley looking at the stem cell. So this is built on a lot of work. And what we're saying is that some aspects of aging are not as rigid as we thought. They're not as final as we thought. You know, in talking to my mom, who I always run stuff by her, and I try and, you know, she's sort of the general audience that I run things by. And that's what, you know, she's like, so it's not final. That's what she always says. You know, it's not the end. And I'm like, well, certain aspects seem to be a bit more plastic than we thought.
All you got to do is reverse the enzyme process and we're in business, right? Let me bring another caller on here. And that's you, David. Hi, you're on.
Hi, good morning. When the body replaces blood, such as in a situation with therapeutic phlebotomy, how is that blood different or similar to young blood?
So I think one thing to keep in mind is that the factors that are in the plasma that we're using for the cognitive studies, we don't know whether they're necessarily derived from the blood cells, because the blood itself is sort of like a highway, right, by which all these different tissues communicate. So we don't know whether the factors that we're talking about are coming from the young liver, the young muscle, you know, the young fat perhaps, or the young bone marrow. So I think we still need a lot more studies in order to really figure out what's going on with respect to youth.
And thank you for the call, David. Here we go to another caller, and that's Phil. Phil, you're on forum.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. I came across it's either published last week or I came across last week a study that said mice rats respond differently to female scientists versus male scientists, and that would be significant because then it would invalidate a whole bunch of studies. I'm just wondering if this study would be one of those that would be affected by that biasness that was found.
Yeah, I also saw the study, and I thought that it was quite an interesting study. So I'll give you a little bit of context for this study. So this is the Nature Medicine study. So when we started it back at Stanford, so the cognitive studies were first done by myself and another master's student who were both males, and then the study was repeated again. And then in my lab when we started, we again did it, and we did, you know, some other, you know, sort of mechanistic studies, but we again did the cognition, and that one actually involved both students that were male as well as students that were female. So we have a combination of both genders with respect to this study. And we've actually observed the cognitive studies, I think, four or five different times now between Stanford and UCSF.
And we thank you for the call. Jeffrey writes, intriguing study. Can you envision the bioethics required to manage a society where the young are asked to donate their blood to the rapidly rising population of 90-year-olds who are losing memory? Huge issues, he says. And again, another listener raises a question about could young blood concept be applicable to neurodiseases like ALS? And that all remains a question for the future. Let me go to Bill the next. Bill in Sonoma, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, giving regular donations of blood, will that have the same effect on me, recreating my blood in that way?
Yeah, so I think one of the keys here is that it's age-dependent. So what we saw is that when you take blood from the young animals, we see the effects. If we take blood from old age-matched animals, so the same age as the old animals, we don't see the effects. So it seems to be something special when you're younger that's no longer there when you're older. So it's age-dependent.
Age-dependent in the mice.
Yes.
How would that extrapolate? Can we even surmise or begin to think in terms of humans if this has applicability?
Yeah, in terms of the age, Jackson Laboratories, which is where a lot of scientists and labs get our animal models, they have this really nice chart that sort of tries to put together the mouse lifespan and the human lifespan. So the three-month-old animals that we use would be roughly equivalent to people in their 20s, and the 18-month-old mice that we use would be roughly equivalent to someone in their 60s.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Sal Villeda. He's assistant professor of anatomy at UCSF and co-author of the UCSF-Stanford study, which actually injected, infused young blood into older mice and vice versa. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to Sharon in San Francisco. Morning.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just have a question related to red blood cell production. So do you think there's anything is there any correlation between people who start to exercise that are older and your red blood cell production increases and the cells would be newer than if they were you were in more of a non-exercise state? So the marrow would be producing fresher blood cells. Is there anything to do? Because people seem to feel better after that. Their cognition improves according to other studies and just wondering if that has anything to do.
Yeah, so I'll take that in two different ways. Let's focus first on the exercise. So there's a lot of literature, really great literature, that has shown in mouse models that when you do exercise, you can increase the number of stem cells in your brain, as well as improve cognitive function, especially even at older ages. However, again, how long-lasting those effects are, you know, there aren't exhaustive studies on that. In terms of then seeing how that works versus what we're seeing, they're similar in that they're both systemic changes. However, what we're seeing really seems to be more derived on the age. So it has to be a young sort of a donor mouse that causes the effect on the older one. So I think they're both beneficial strategies. Both can enhance cognition, but I think they may be working slightly differently.
And we thank you for the call, Sharon. And here's a question online from a listener, Tegan, who writes, should we be concerned about the elderly donating blood?
Yeah, when the first paper came out in 2011, you know, people were asking that. And again, you know, the way that donations are right now is it's not that one individual is going to affect another individual, so there's no health scare with respect to that.
What about this gets into kind of a different area, but always people are asking about exercise and aging, and they always ask about food and aging. I mean, are there any studies in terms of what mice eat and the way it affects their brains?
Yeah, and that's a really important thing to keep in mind when you're doing laboratory research, in that we know that caloric restriction actually has a huge impact on lifespan itself, you know, in models such as mice. And there's even some studies that show some benefits even in
so there's rapamycin, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's been studies that have been published on all of this. So there's, you know, I think what all of these studies get at is this idea of plasticity, this idea that aging is not as rigid as we maybe originally thought, that there may be multiple approaches by which we can maybe, you know, change or reverse or ameliorate different aspects of the aging process.
And that growth differentiation molecule that we talked about before, that actually is seen as reversing as opposed to slowing down, which would be as a result of caloric restriction, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. So they administered this one factor, and they saw, you know, enhancements in muscle stem cells and also in the brain stem cells that are involved in smelling. So it's a slightly different region that we looked at, but again, they're stem cell populations. I think the questions that remain now is really trying to understand whether the contribution we're seeing on things such as cognition is one factor or multiple factors. And I think, you know, we've all sort of, you know, because in all the different media sources, you know, they have quotes from all of us. And I think there's sort of a consensus that, you know, for things such as higher order functions, you know, it's probably a combination of things. And identifying and understanding how each one works collectively may one day sort of, you know, sort of recapitulate the full effect of young blood.
Just putting those puzzle pieces together.
Exactly.
In effect, isn't it? Yeah. But now we're going to see some clinical trials. In fact, you mentioned your partner from Stanford who's founded a biotech company to explore therapeutic implications of these new studies. Where is the research going to go next?
Well, in terms of my lab, you know, the entire focus of my research program is, you know, the molecular, you know, the biology of anti-aging, the biology of rejuvenation. And we focus, you know, specifically on cognition. That's what I really enjoy understanding. And yeah, we're interested in, okay, what is it about the brain? Your brain is getting older, you're aging, yet something is left in that old brain that we can tap into and somehow make that old brain seem younger again, at least with respect to some functions. What is it? What is left in your old brain that is causing that? What cells, what molecules, what genes? And I have, you know, a whole bunch of doctoral students and postdocs and master's students that are all, each one taking on a small sliver of that big question.
So it's like Ponce de Leon searching for the secret of eternal youth or something along those lines. Well, the research is impressive, and thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast.
Sal Villeda, he is assistant professor of anatomy at UCSF, author, co-author of the study done by UCSF and Stanford. And can they read this online, Sal? Is this available?
So the paper itself is not available. They have to go. It's still, you have to pay for each article.
Okay, well, continued luck and success with your research, and thank you again for joining us. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. We're going to look ahead in the next hour. In fact, we're going to talk about places to go to as the summer comes upon us for recreation, for fun, for, the sights, the vistas, the waterfalls, camping, all that. Should be a pretty full hour, and all kinds of suggestions of things you can do, either by yourself or with your loved ones or just with friends and whatever. Also, want to remind you who's behind the scenes here. Forums produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.